80% of your business comes from 20% of your customers. The biggest deals at Salesforce and the biggest deals in any enterprise software company are coming from very few accounts. So it's really important that you're not thinly spread. You're going to have to segment your accounts and pick a couple, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 max accounts to go deep on. And yeah, that's where you can get all your business from.
Hi, welcome to Selling to Enterprises podcast. That is the voice of Ian Koniak, one of the most successful enterprise sales guys I have ever met, and now a full-time sales coach, sharing his thoughts on how to go from good to great in selling to enterprises. Without further ado, let's get started.
Thanks for joining today. I appreciate that.
I'm happy to be here, and thanks for all you're doing for the sales community as well.
Please tell us about your journey so far, Ian. Connect the dots for us, please.
Yeah, so I got into sales, in 2002 is when I started. So almost 20 years ago now, I've been a professional seller. I started, oddly enough, selling copy machines, which I heard from one of your other guests. That's how they started in that printing world too. And that was really the school of hard knocks. I had no sales experience prior to sales. I was a teacher in South America, and I was very interested in helping and, you know, serving and traveling, and ended up falling in love in that country. And I had to know my visa expired, and I had no way of actually continuing this relationship unless I had enough money to bring this woman from South America to the US and pay for her college and get her a student visa. And so we were broke at the time, and we were separated continents apart. And I said, how can I make as much money as possible and just work as hard as I can? And that's what got me into a field of sales. And I've never looked back. It's 19 years later. And I spent 10 years in Rico, started as an individual seller and became a major account seller, and eventually got promoted to sales manager, general manager, and then director of sales, where I led a team of 80 direct employees. So I had 10 sales teams and 70 sales reps working for me. And we implemented Salesforce. And it was during the Great Recession that we brought it in, and all the companies were doing bad, and our company was no exception. And I managed to grow revenue by 30% during that period when everyone else was declining. And I really started believing in the power of SaaS and the power of Salesforce. And so much so that I said, you know what, I'm going to go try and work at this company, Salesforce. And so here we are 9 years later. I went back to being an individual contributor because Salesforce required me to do that in order to get my foot in the door. They wouldn't take me as a leader without having that SaaS experience. And so I proved myself as an IC. I ended up, you know, doing very well, and certainly had my share of struggles through the times at Salesforce, but was fortunate to figure it out. And now I'm coming off, five very, very, very strong years at Salesforce. And you'll be the first to know I'm leaving Salesforce. I gave my notice. I gave my notice recently where I'm going to be running a coaching business full time now, teaching enterprise sellers and companies how to crack and tackle into selling to the enterprise. So it's kind of come full circle for me back to teaching after 19 years. So it's,
congratulations. That's great news. Yeah.
It's very, very exciting. And Salesforce just found out, and they were very professional, and I have nothing but good things to say about the company, but it's time for my next chapter in my own journey. So it's been a great ride so far.
Congratulations, man. That's great news.
It's great to see people selling the way that I've learned to sell, and the joy that it brings and the success it brings. And I just want to bring that to more people in the sales community. So selling ultimately can be a destination career versus something that people fear or repulse because they think of it in a certain way, which simply isn't accurate.
Of course. So while we are on that topic, why don't you tell us more about your coaching business? Who does it really work for, Ian?
Yeah, I think the ideal customer profile that I've worked with is someone that is really trying to go from good to great in sales. They've been good most of their career because they've been grinding and they've been working really hard. But what they're finding is they're reaching a plateau and they're not getting the results they know they're capable of. So what they're realizing is that something's got to change. And they come to me and they say, I'm working so hard, I don't know what to do. You know, can you help me be more strategic and more consultative in my selling approach? Because I feel like I'm just, you know, transactional, or I'm just trying to muscle it and it's not working. And that's certainly one type of client. The other type of client is I'm working with sales leaders to help them coach and train their sales teams to be able to sell in the same type of manner where I can do workshops and training programs. So for the individual coaching, it's definitely individuals who are looking for help and aren't getting it from their own companies or their own leadership or just don't have that muscle yet. And for the companies, it's really trying to incorporate this methodology into the way they sell for larger, more strategic accounts.
Fantastic. That is great. That is great. So in your opinion, right, I mean, over the last 18 months or so, things have been really different in the B2B world. But in today's world, what do you think are the top attributes required for a successful enterprise salesperson?
I think there's a lot, and I'm glad you asked the question, right? I think there's the skills, and then there's the mindset, and then there's the habits, if we want to break it down into kind of three buckets. So I'll start with mindset. I think there's a term that I've heard and used before called commission breath. And that's the salesperson that is out for themselves, out for their commission. And in the enterprise, it just simply doesn't work, right? Enterprise accounts want partners. They want long-term strategic relationships with companies and individuals that care about their success, that take the time to really understand their business and can be relevant with relevant solutions that can help these companies achieve their greatest goals and overcome their biggest obstacles. So the mindset of that person is someone who has to be curious, really trying to understand what a company is doing today, what their challenges are, and not just jump to, you know, hey, here's how we can help you. Here's what we pitch. So, you know, curiosity, I think definitely you have to be interested, genuine is the key word, genuinely interested in helping other people. So helpful is the third quality, right? So interested, curious, helpful. You really do have to be intelligent, which again is something that some people were born with and some people are going to have to work at a little bit harder because these companies, it's a lot to have to understand, right? It's easy to say, oh, my solution, it's so obvious, it can fix all these problems, but you have to be understanding and empathetic and realize, you know, sometimes these companies have technology that's 20 years, you know, deeply ingrained and they have people that have been there forever and they have, you know, change is really hard for them and really understanding what got them to this point versus saying, oh, it's so easy, just, you know, swap everything out, right? So I think empathy and really patience is another, patience is really, really important, right? These are qualities that are determining of a top salesperson because these sales cycles can be 6 months, a year, sometimes many years. And if you're just trying to get that win at the end of the month or the end of the quarter, you're going to do something that is going to jeopardize the larger strategic win. So sometimes maybe you won't hit your number for 1, 2, 3 quarters and you might make all of it in the fourth quarter, right? That's just the nature of the enterprise sales. I think transparency and being direct is really important for these people. You don't want to beat around the bush. You want to be able to be honest and direct. And if there's a conflict or something that frankly is going to be difficult to tell the client, you need to face it head on and not hide or try and disguise what's really going on. I think clients appreciate that, even if the news isn't good news. I think that probably sums it up. For the habits perspective, it's really about really hard workers, right? It's a hard work. And I don't mean hard work like I'm just going to do a bunch of cold calls. I mean the hard work of putting together an account plan, doing deep research on an individual or a company, going through 10Ks. Like it is a grind in the sense of this is mental work that takes a long time. Sometimes these proposals, you're combining 10 or 15 contracts and all kinds of weird terms that you're consolidating. And in Salesforce's case, man, we have so many acquisitions that we've done with Tableau and MuleSoft and Slack, and these clients want very large strategic agreements, enterprise agreements that are very long, can take months to put together and negotiate. So I think the degree of work, it's not necessarily like you're getting that dopamine hit of getting a quick sale right away, which a lot of salespeople want. Like a lot of times you won't see that, you know, end of the road gold pot until very end. And in the meantime, you're doing this really arduous, difficult work of like, you know, working on spreadsheets and these 30-page, 50-page proposals, man, it's hard, right? So that patience and that knowledge and understanding and creativity, there are so many skills and attributes needed to make. I could go on all day. So I think I captured a lot of what's needed to be that. And I think the last thing I'll end up with is someone who genuinely cares you have to be caring. You have to care more about your client success than your own commissions. And that's something when I started stopping counting my commissions and started thinking about how I can help my customers, that's when my commissions were bigger than ever. So it's ironic, but it's the truth. If a client knows you care and they see that you're interested in their success, they will work with you. And that's something you can't fake. So you really do have to be a caring person that gives a damn about your clients and what they're trying to solve for and helps them get that.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. You know, thanks for sharing that, Ian. So just stretching that a bit, I remember one of your videos, you know, sell the grass, not the seeds. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk more about that? You know, just digging deeper into it?
Yeah, so I think it's a really good analogy and people get a great idea. And I made a video and I showed my lawn. And right now, fortunately, my lawn looks beautiful, but it didn't always look that way. There were patches. It was brown. And I had to hire a new landscaper and a landscape designer to actually come in. And it got me thinking about, you know, how it relates to sales, because all I wanted was a lawn that was green and lush. And that's kind of the way our clients are thinking. All they want is, you know, a culture at their company that attracts and retains employees and makes people want to be a destination company. If you're an HR employee, you know, selling employee productivity solutions, right? Like Slack or whatever, it's all about driving engagement and happy employees. If you're selling solutions that can drive revenue, all the CRO wants is to have productive account executives who are overachieving and can hit those revenue targets that are going to make them successful and their company successful. So how do you grow customers? How do you win more deals? How do you land new logos? How do you retain customers? So when I say the sell the grass and not the seeds, what I'm talking about is understand the vision of your customer. Understand what the grass is that they want, the outcomes they want, the vision of what success looks like first, right? What does their beautiful lawn look like? What an ideal scenario, an ideal world, what does good look like for them if they could have the most successful year in the career that they've ever had? What outcomes would they have achieved, right? That's what I mean by sell the grass.
Great. So very recently I've been getting requests around from my listeners. They want to hear about especially prospecting in today's world, right? Getting in front of new clients, especially with this work from home kind of a working model now, right? Any advice, best practices there that you can share?
I do a lot of coaching and this comes up a lot. The one thing I would say that I want listeners to remember is you need to stand out, okay? And how do you stand out? It's not through mass emailing. It's not through batch and blast. It's not through sequences that you create in Sales Loft or, you know, outreach or Salesforce. It's through personalized, hyper-personalized messaging. So I'm going to give you an example of one that we did this morning with my client. So my client said, Ian, I don't know what to say to this person. I can't find information online. Well, the first thing you try to do is you try to find information online. That's the first one. So I'll go with that scenario first, and then I'll tell you what to do if you can't find that information online. So it's very easy to find company information and say, here's how I can help your company. Where I find is most effective is finding the individual information. And basically, it's the same way you reached out to me. You said you watched my videos, they made an impact, you're running this podcast, it's for enterprises, and that's why I looked you up, listened to a podcast, and decided to come on. You hyper-personalized this to me, you made it relevant, and I was happy to help you out. Our clients are the same way, okay? But the key is that you have to stand out. And the more it's about them and their uniqueness, the more likely you are to close for a first meeting, right? To get them to take a meeting. So an example I can give you is I was looking up a CIO. He was a VP of infrastructure. And there was nothing online except his LinkedIn. So we found his profile and he didn't post much. But then we looked at his companies he had worked at. And it looked like he had a nonprofit venture that he was at. And the nonprofit venture was called, I don't remember the exact name. I think it was something along the lines of Stop the Spread. Okay. And it was a COVID awareness campaign that helped people to get the facts about COVID versus all the misinformation that's spreading in the media. And he was very passionate about helping people stop the spread of COVID through factual information. And so what I told my client to do was to put the message heading as Stop the Spread member and make the first paragraph, hey, I just, first of all, I want to say thank you for the work you're doing and helping stop the spread. I took the pledge. Maybe it was called Take the Pledge. I took the pledge myself to stop the spread, and I love what you're doing. Now, does that have anything to do with what he's selling? Absolutely not. Does it have something to do with what the guy cares about? 100%. So you want to make your message about what the person cares about, even if it's something that's not to do with your product or service yet. The reason why is because you're going to stand out when you do that versus, hey, I see your work here. I can help you with these things. Do you want to meet? Which is what everyone says. Okay. That's my first piece of advice. The second piece of advice, which is more important, is once you say, hey, I signed up for Stop the Spread, then you need to put your relevant message or point of view in how you can help based on your research of what you're doing. So in this case, you're not going to help him stop the spread with your, you know, you see this guy sold storage devices for data centers, right? So he's not going to help stop the spread with the storage device. It's nothing to do with it. So I just had him write that first paragraph about that and say, you know, as I looked in your profile, I also saw that you're VP of infrastructure and that you've done some startups in the past. And now you're looking to migrate a lot of your hybrid and on-premise over to cloud applications. My company, knowing you're a bank with regulations that you're going to have some hybrid and on-premise that are going to stay there, my company helps you actually connect central storage to all three, cloud, hybrid, and on-premise, to maximize uptime and get out of this cycle. I'm not sure what your roadmap looks like, but I would love the opportunity to at least learn on how you're tackling this as we can help you in these key areas. So that's what I call linkage. You're establishing linkage between what they said and what your company does. This guy hadn't said that publicly, but what he did is he shared a post on an architect opening, an architecture cloud opening that he was hiring for, which talked about their environment and the skills that was needed. So I helped him really dig and he put that in the email. We wrote it together and he said, hey, I saw you're hiring for this and I'm not sure it's relevant, but it made me want to reach out to you because I think we can help given where you're at. And so here's what's going to happen from this. Okay. The guy's going to see this and he's going to say, this person genuinely is different than every other cold call I get. He cares about me and he put together a thoughtful message. Now, whether or not your product or service is something they need or are interested in, it doesn't matter. It's more, they're going to say, I'm going to take a meeting because this person stood out and just, they deserve that, right? People want to help. And the second thing I would say is after you've done that message, if you don't get a response, you have to assume, you know, maybe one out of four or five emails might even get read. So that's why the message is so important and you make it about them. But if they don't read it, you have to follow up. And every time you follow up, it takes on average 8 touch points before somebody actually engages in the first meeting. So a touch point can be a call, an email, a LinkedIn request, a message on LinkedIn, a video, whatever. So don't stop at that first one. Follow up. And every time you follow up, you want to add a little more value. You want to share a little more context, whether it be an ebook or a white paper or a demo video or a customer story. You need different assets that you can use to nurture that initial contact. And most people, frankly, give up after 2 or 3 touch points. So you got to keep going. It's better to focus on few people from your strategic accounts than it is to focus on 100 people and only do 1 or 2 touches for them. I'd rather do 15 touches for 1 or 2 people because eventually I'm going to get a response. So that's how I tackle prospecting. And it's been very, very effective, Zia.
Yeah. Sounds like it. Definitely sounds like it. So that's pretty cool. So you have identified an account, you got a meeting and all that. So, you know, you get into the account, you're trying to sell there, but it's also very important to identify coaches or champions in the account, right? How do you identify who's the right person for that? And how do you build on from there on? How do you sell through champions?
I think champions and change agents are not two of the same thing. People throw out the word champion a lot. And somebody might not be a champion and you think they're a champion. So I actually did a video on this week, talk about how do you know if your champion is really a champion. I check it out for sure if you haven't already seen it.
Awesome.
I get this a lot as well. And I think the question you want to ask is how do I identify a change agent in my account, right? Because if you're selling large deals, 7-8-figure deals, you need somebody who is a change agent. And the difference is a champion will go to bat for a project and sell it internally. A change agent will go to bat to change the way the company works. Okay. And they're two very different things, right? Yeah. So the big deals, you need change agents. The smaller deals, you just need a champion that's going to sell it on your behalf. And the way that I ask and identify is I usually, one way is oftentimes if they're new to the company and they are in a senior position, they've been brought in to make changes. They are replacing somebody who is not effective, or they are brought in to basically get results that have not been happening. So I like to turn on the alerts in LinkedIn that tell you if someone new comes in the company within the past year who's a senior executive, or you can filter that way in LinkedIn Sales Navigator to see, you know, who's new in my accounts over the past year with a VP title or higher, and reach out to that person and really just say, I know you're brought in new, and again, hyper-personalize. When you get that first meeting, it's all about understanding, hey, why'd you come to this company? And what did you find? What's your observations been in your first 6 months? Where do you feel like there's the, you know, things that are broken the most? What were you brought in to do? You know, what outcomes are you trying to solve for and achieve for? What's your plan? How are you going to go about actually achieving this? And where do you feel like the biggest gaps are today? So for me, it's when I go in, it's all about getting them to open up about their goals, their initiatives, their challenges, rather than talking about my products and services and pitching. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm going to get there. I'm going to get to my products and services, but that's for a later date, okay? Because I have the luxury and the curse of working in a company with 50 products. And so I don't know what I can sell them or even what they need until I understand where their challenges lie and where their goals lie. And so that's really what I'm focused on. If they push back and they say, hey, Ian, you know, what do you do? And, you know, tell me about yourself. Going to have a point of view that I've prepared for that first meeting based on the research of where I think we can help them and what I think we can do to help address some challenges that they've publicly stated or publicly shared to the extent that I can. And I'm going to be very humble and say, I don't know if this is right. This is just me gathering my research, and I'd love to get your point of view. Is this top of mind for you? Or is there something else that you're focused on that's more immediate? Okay. So coming prepared with those questions that identify, are they looking at the big picture or are they looking at the tactical? You know, if they start talking about needing to replace servers, or, hey, you know, we're trying to put in a lead, you know, a lead scoring system, or like really specific, then you're probably not talking to a change agent. So in general, I find the higher you go, the bigger the title and the bigger the responsibility, the bigger the vision and the bigger, you know, the initiatives are that they can open up for and tell you about. And you want to be mapped to those initiatives. That's the key. As far as identifying whether they can get a deal done and champion a deal, it's really about finding out, have you done a deal before of this magnitude? You ask them about the process, who has to approve, when does your legal get involved, when does your purchasing get involved, when does your IT get involved, you know, what's, you know, all the other critical stakeholders that besides yourself, because there's probably 8 to 10 people in these large deals that need to have their eyes on it. So if they know who and what the process looks like and they've done it before successfully, then that's a really good indicator. But again, many people don't ask about that because they don't want to come across as too aggressive. So you start by asking about their initiatives and then mapping back and showing them, hey, here's how I think we can help you. Who else needs to get their eyes on it? And if they generally can introduce you to these other stakeholders or other departments, or if they can basically force the hand and force their team to meet with you to show you their systems and processes, you're dealing most likely with the champion. That's how I judge, is can they get me in front of people? And when they ask for something, do other people move to make it happen, right? Because when the boss is asking, people will pivot and reprioritize. So that's really key, is making sure you're attached to one of their top priorities. That's like right now, that's going on for them.
Yeah, makes sense. What I've also found is it's all about the questions, right? Asking the right questions. And that's how you build the trust on the other side, right? And they really like you for that.
Exactly. And the questions need to be thoughtful and ideally based on the research. So in this case where that I was helping my client prospect and identify, they had a lot of stuff about their systems and requirements. And I the questions you would ask would be the strategic questions, but also the questions based on your research. Hey, I saw you mention this in your interview. I saw you mention this on your sometimes these executives are featured speakers at conferences or events, podcasts. So if you watch those and you pull apart things that relate to your product or service, and then you ask about those, that really gets people to open up. I mean, people love to talk about themselves. So that's how, it's not really how to identify as a champion, but it's definitely how to get them to open up. And then really champion, it's really about, can they get you in front of the right people? Have they successfully brought in deals before? Do they have the power to fund and to actually secure funding, right? These are things that typically will come a little later once you've established the need and you're working together. But if a deal stalled and, you know, they're really, it's the people that aren't thinking about the big picture and the bit, if they don't care about their business outcomes and their revenue and their customer experience, you're probably dealing with the wrong people because those things are fundamentally important. That's right. They're just worried about their own little world. Part of my language, I don't want to diminish their importance, but if they're just worrying about something that is not material to the company, then they're probably not going to be a change agent or a champion, right?
Well, that's a very good point. Very good point. So, having conversations with the CXOs or the executives is a different ballgame altogether, right?
It is.
Any advice there that you would like to share, Ryan?
I think you need to be sharp when you show up with executives. I think it's really important to have your planning and your preparation in order. And it's not about, you know, here's the generic questions that I'm asking. You need to, if I secure a meeting with a chief customer officer or a head of revenue or sales, I am looking at everything I can about them and I'm preparing all those questions. And, you know, these are some probably advice that you've probably heard quite often, but you want to do a lot more listening than talking. I think one of the things I'd say is, in my experience working with senior executives, we're talking about extremely successful, very, very wealthy, very influential people that are at the top of these Fortune 500 companies. And I've had to meet a lot of them. They are the most down-to-earth, nicest, open, direct people you can find. And I think a lot of AEs get really intimidated if they think I'm talking to the CEO or CIO or whatever or VP whatever in a Fortune 500 company. And in my experience, it's the opposite, right? One of my clients, great guy, his name's Lyle, and he, nicest guy. We just talked about Disneyland. He had four or five kids and I was going to Disneyland. And you want to build rapport with these executives in a way that is authentic, not, hey, I see you're a Giants fan. I'm a Giants fan too. Bullshit. No, it's about like, hey, like the human to human connection is what people gravitate towards. So the more you can be authentic and be yourself and not put up a front and not look up. I always say when you're looking up to someone, you can't see them eye to eye. And what people do is they look up to these executives. And when you're looking up, that's very uncomfortable for you and for them. Okay. So you have to be seen as an equal. You have to see yourself as an equal. Yeah. And the way you do that is you need to be convinced before you ever meet with them that you can add value. And the way you do that is you learn what you're doing with other customers. You learn what stories that you've successfully helped other customers with similar goals and transformations as what you're going to position. You come prepared to share those stories. The degree of your preparation is directly correlated to the degree of your success when you're presenting to executives. So you have to be prepared with a point of view, with customer stories, with questions, and most importantly, just be yourself. I find that executives don't like a PowerPoint. Okay. They like to just talk and shoot the shit. If you can get them out of the office, get them to lunch, just really have a real conversation and be real with them. That's the kind of people that you don't want to come across as salesy. You just want to come across as interested. Be interested, not interesting. Be interested, not interesting. You're not trying to impress them. You're trying to be interested in them. And that will make you interesting to them.
So two important points keep coming out when you in every answer that you have given, right? One is the hard work that you talk about, right? Because you select fewer number of clients to go after and the amount of work you do in the research and make on the contacts, on the companies and all that. So that's hard work. That is a grind that you've been talking about, right? And second thing is being authentic, genuine, right? So that's how you build trust and all that. So thanks for that. I know you're big on mental health, right? Love to get, how do you handle a down day, right? How do you handle one of those low motivation days?
I'm gonna pause that question for 1 second and go back to what you just said for 1 minute because I think it's really important. So when my results, I was grinding and grinding, trying to treat everyone as a transaction and not getting the results for the first 4 years at Salesforce. And then I shifted to this authentic, caring, focused way of selling, and my results tripled. I went from selling around 1.5 million to selling $4 million, right, per year in making my income also triple too. So the big shift was this, it's called the Pareto principle, and it's the 80-20 rule. Okay. 80% of your business comes from 20% of your customers. The biggest deals at Salesforce and the biggest deals in any enterprise software company are coming from very few accounts. So it's really important that you're not thinly spread. You're going to have to segment your accounts and pick a couple, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 max accounts to go deep on. And yeah, that's where you can get all your business from. And you keep growing and going to their subsidiaries and other departments, and you go into other use cases or products. I mean, that's how we sell. I only have 2 accounts now, and they're doing 20 million because I'm still technically at Salesforce. By the time this comes out, I'll be fully on my own. But they're doing 20 million in annual revenue just for the 2 accounts. That's a full-time job. So wow. I have pity for people that are trying to manage 300-400 accounts because it's simply impossible. You pick the biggest ones based on your propensity to buy, you know, the size of the revenue, the industry that they're in, the number of employees, you know, the factors, maybe their spend with you already, existing spend, and you segment those accounts and you say, what are the big ones that I'm going to focus on? And that's where you get all your attention. And then you let the BDRs or some of the other folks focus on the rest of them. And you really have to, you know, be focused. So 80-20 principle is very real. And that's how I've been able to be successful. Now, on the mental health question, I'm glad you asked about that. You know, I think it's important. We all have bad days. I've talked a lot about this before, but I struggled with mental health for much of my life. And I didn't know I was struggling with mental health, if that makes sense, right? I didn't have depression or anxiety. But what I did have is this constant feeling of always being stressed and always never being happy. I felt like a hamster on a wheel, and I just was exhausted. And I always felt like I was on the verge of burnout, right? So I had this work hard mentality. And then when I wasn't working, I'd have to really detach to get out. And unfortunately for me, my way of detaching was having drinks or maybe smoking a joint or you know, going and playing video games. So it was like this all in work and then all out. And there was no in between. Okay. And I made some big changes in my life about 18 months ago where I said, you know what? This isn't working. It's not working for me. It's not working for my family. And I had some really hard things happen to me that forced me to make these changes where I could have lost everything had I not, you know, focused on my mental health. So I think it's really important to mental health is misunderstood in especially in sales, where people think, you know, you have to be on the street or suicidal or, you know, really in that rock bottom to have a mental health issue. And that's just not the case, right? If your day-to-day quality in life and you're not happy and you're always stressed and overwhelmed and you're losing sleep, and that's a mental health crisis. And so for me, I've had to incorporate. So what I did is I gave up a lot of these bad, maladaptive habits or ways of coping with the stress. And I started incorporating day-to-day, I'd say very helpful, healthy ways of coping. So I think that's key, is to start by taking a personal inventory and saying, you know, how am I coping with my stress now? Am I watching a lot of TV? Am I playing video games? Am I going on Netflix or YouTube or, you know, drowning in sports? You know, there's, am I shopping? I mean, there's accepted addictions, and then there's other, but they're all addictions. They're all just kind of habits and ways of us coping. And get real with yourself. It starts with getting real and saying, you know what, when I do these things, I'm not happy with myself. If you're happy with yourself, fine, keep going about your business. But if you feel like you're not entirely happy with yourself, that's kind of the step one, is that awareness. Okay, I'm not happy. Second step is get help, right? That's the key, right? For any mental health issue, whether it's dealing with depression or anxiety or addiction or anything, there's going to be a community and a resource. Therapy for me has been really, really helpful to have therapy. I still go to help me with positive, healthy ways of coping and being a better husband and father and making time for my family. So awareness is step one. Getting help is step two. I think a third thing is you have to set boundaries. Okay. When I say boundaries, people say, Ian, how do you do it all? I get this all the time. How do you, you know, make these videos and work at Salesforce and do a coaching business and have 2 kids under 5 years old and, you know, have real estate investments that you're managing. Like, I have a lot on my plate. Okay. And I still only work 40 hours a week, even with all of that. So I have boundaries that I say, I work from 8 to 6 every day. I say work 40 hours. That sounds like 50, but every day I have lunch with my wife for an hour. Okay. And then I have other things that I do. I have my, my 12-step group I go to, the therapy. So that's not really work. It's personal development, but that's it. Those 8 to 6 is my time for work. And on Friday, I cut a little earlier, 4 or 5 o'clock, and I draw the line. Okay. When I get in the house, I'm present with my family. I turn off my phone, I turn off my computer, and I either watch the kids, I play with the kids, or I cook dinner. And then after that, we watch a little TV and we rinse and repeat. It almost feels like the Twilight Zone. Or we read, or we, you know, I just spend quality time with my family. So I think the key in all of this, I said set boundaries, but then what are you doing when you're not working is the question. So for me, when I'm not working, I'm either with my family, which is building that connection. You have to have loneliness is a big source of mental health issues. And you want to have those connections with people that you love. And whether you're not in a relationship or not, you know, you want to connect with friends, family, loved ones, kids to really bring that source of joy, that truth, that divinity, how God made us to love each other. If you're not loving somebody else and giving your love, you're going to be lonely. And so for me, it's important that I can give my love to my family and be present for them. So that's one thing. Another thing is exercise. I try to exercise on a regular basis. I'm training for a half marathon right now because exercise gives me the energy that I need to be able to perform my best and be able to, set goals for myself outside of work that I'm proud of that I can bring into work because I'm proud of the accomplishments that I'm doing outside of work. So having things you're proud of outside of work, these are all ways. And there's a theme here. The theme is doing, right? You're doing things to help you with the mental crisis. You're doing things like therapy, like exercising, like connecting with your loved ones, like getting help, right? You have to take action. Otherwise, you're going to feel like you're in an endless cycle. And, you know, it's that's when we get miserable, Zia, is when we're not doing anything about it, right? We're not so upset of where we're at. We're so upset that it's not changing. And it's like the definition of insanity. So I've had to work on an internal journey myself to really focus on my family, on my mental health, to become somebody that's able to then coach. And that's part of the reason I'm leaving Salesforce. I want to help people truly become the best version of themselves. I love sales training and sales coaching. Even more, I love helping people become their best version of themselves and you know, break an addiction or start to exercise or be the better husband and father. That's what fills my soul. That's what brings me the true joy. And that's frankly why I'm moving into coaching, because I believe everyone can do it if they just focus on it and they take action. So
well, that is impressive. You know, thanks for sharing that, Ian. So I have two final questions for the session today. One is, I'm looking for advice in terms of what does a sales guy have to do in the first 90 days or the first few days in a new job so that they lay the foundation for a successful career at that company?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I think you want to put together a 30, 60, 90-day plan yourself. Typically, what would be included with a 30-day plan is you're going to want to meet with your team. You're going to want to understand the resources that are supporting you from, you know, as product specialist, engineering, sales operations, finance, you know, the extended team. Take the time to get to know the extended team, what their roles are and how you're going to work with them. You're going to want to know the processes in the first 30 days. You're going to really want to know, okay, how do I, you know, submit a quote, you know, for a client? Where do I look up my customer information and see my current customers? Where do I go when I need help, you know, with different things? Maybe it's onboarding, you know, getting my benefits set up or, you know, my computer laptop program. So it's really just kind of those processes and systems and onboarding and, you know the team, the people, the resources, the technology that you need to be set up for success. I would kind of start there as a foundation. Yeah. Then the next 30 days is really about, I would say, learning the value proposition, what's unique about your company, why people buy, get really familiar with your customer stories and who you've helped. I remember when I started at Salesforce, that was what I was doing. That's all I was doing, was watching Dreamforce videos to see all of the customer success stories. And I started documenting, here's how we helped this customer. Here's how we helped this customer. So I started sharing those stories with my prospects. I think it's never too early to reach out to clients, frankly. I mean, don't hesitate and wait 90 days to make your first outreach. Just because you don't know everything about a client doesn't mean that you can't start meeting with them. So the process and the people and the team is kind of done in parallel with clients. So getting your client list, getting your prospect list is foundational. And then starting to segment those accounts, like I talked about. So I usually segment into A, B, and C accounts. A is my top accounts with the greatest potential to buy. B is the, you know, middle, pretty good. C is crap, right? C is like, I'm not touching them. So really kind of that territory planning, who am I going to go after? And then within the account, identifying all of the target personas that you're going after. So, you know, if you're selling a solution that can impact revenue and sales, you want to know, you know, who's the head of inside sales, who's the CRO, who's the VP of sales, who are the sales operations people, the sales enablement people, the revenue operations people, right? So really kind of mapping out all of those contacts within the company to see who to target. And then it's I'd say in the last 30 days, the 90 days, it's about getting in front of your customers. Now, if you have current customers, that's where I would go first and foremost. I wouldn't try to sell them up front. I would try to understand how they're using the products and services, if they're getting the value. You know, does this product map to their most strategic initiatives? Who are the players in their company and how is change made? Really kind of start to identify those champions and get in front of your clients, because the sooner you can get in front of the clients, the sooner you can start driving pipeline. But don't ignore your clients in pursuit of new logos. Like, get in front of every current customer. Those are the low-hanging fruit. Those are the ones that are already using your products and services, where you can cross-sell or upsell or expand into other subsidiaries. So you really do want to and need to make sure that you're getting in front of all of them within your first 90 days, depending on the size of your territory. That's going to be a huge source of, I think Salesforce, the latest stats I heard were I don't know if this is public or not, but it's a pretty, more than half, a high percentage of our clients' growth is from expansion. It's from adding additional products and services to the current clients or selling it to other subsidiaries. So I really do feel like that's an area that people sometimes neglect. They're going after logos when right in front of them could be a huge opportunity. So that's kind of how I would tackle my first 90 days. Just build those relationships internally and with the clients that can, you know, really help you set yourself up for a great first year.
So this is great, Ian. But finally, any advice for the sales head to how do they continue to motivate and inspire their the individual contributors to deliver the best, especially in today's world?
I think it's really important to show your team that you care. And it's the exact same advice I gave account executive that was selling to the client. Show them you care. Get to know them. Get to know what their goals are. What do they want to make this year? Why do they want to make it? What are they trying to do? Are they trying to buy a house? Are they trying to have their wife be a full-time mom so that she can quit her job? Are they trying to, for themselves, be the best version of themselves? Find out what motivates them, what drives them, and help them be successful. I think showing people you care is really, really important. You can only do that by genuinely caring. Don't look at them as a number. I've had managers that I felt like I was just a number for, and all they cared about was me, you know, my deals, and they could give a damn about me as a person. And that's why people quit. People don't quit companies. They quit managers because they feel like their manager doesn't care about them. So you need to care about your people, number one. And number two, you show them a path to be successful. Show them how to do the job, right? Get in the weeds with them. Show them how to put together a proposal. Go out to the customer meeting with them and show them how to close the business and handle the objections. Lead by example. Don't leave behind a desk looking at reports and asking for forecasts and next step. Go out and make them some money, put the money in the pocket, inspire them, and you'll build a loyal customer or employee for life, because they're going to need you for basically making money. And I say that in the most respectful of ways. If they feel like their manager helps them win deals and helps them, you know, hit their goals, they're going to stay with that manager. They will literally follow that manager as that manager gets promoted or changes companies or teams. So that's that loyalty you want to build. And you build it by making them successful and helping them succeed through your example.
So yeah, this has been fantastic. If someone wants to reach out and say hi, what is the best way to do that?
Send me a DM on LinkedIn. Tell me that you listen to Zia's podcast and you know, say hi if you do want coaching or interested in my coaching programs. My site is www.iankoniak.com. That's IANKONIAK.com. I have a little submission form under contact. You can submit your information and get on the wait list for some of my coaching programs. I'm going to be releasing a portal with, you know, all kinds of sales training and modules for enterprise sellers in January timeframe. I'm going to have group coaching programs and still do the awesome individuals. So happy to help people get to that next level and go through kind of the journey that I've been able to experience. And it is better on the other side. So raise your hand, get help, and I'm here for you.
I highly recommend Ian's program. So, you know, the coaching and everything else. So again, this has been fantastic. Thanks for taking the time. You know, greatly appreciate your time today.
Great to be here, Zia. Nice to meet you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please do subscribe to the podcast, and I will greatly appreciate if you can leave a review. If you have any suggestions for future guests or any feedback, please write to me at zia@sellingtoenterprises.com. See you on the next episode. Thank you.